Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastrama Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
okay, page 140. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this mature world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People are generally attached to such enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Srila Prabhupada comments. Of the three chief demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, all but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he is not influenced. The living entities are affected by Maya, but although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he is not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world except for Lord Shiva are swayed by Maya. Lord Shiva is therefore neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He is between the two. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued. The material external energy, Maya, who cooperates with me in creation and who is manifested in the three modes of nature, will not be able to bewilder you any longer. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, having thus been praised by the Supreme Personality, who bears the mark of Srivatsa on his chest, Lord Shiva circumambulated him. Then, after taking permission from him, Lord Shiva returned to his abode, Kailash, along with his associates. Footnote 46. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 41. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that when Lord Shiva was offering obeisances unto Lord Vishnu arose and embraced him. Therefore, the word Sri Vatsang Kena is used here. The mark of Sri Vatsa adorns the chest of Lord Vishnu, and therefore, when Lord Vishnu embraced Lord Shiva while being circumambulated, the Sri Vatsa mark touched Lord Shiva's bosom. O descendant of Bharat Maharaj, Lord Shiva in jubilation then addressed his wife, Bhavani, who is accepted by all authorities as the potency of Lord Vishnu. Lord Shiva said, O goddess, you have now seen the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the unborn master of everyone. Although I am one of the principal expansions of his lordship, even I was illusioned by his energy. What then is to be said of others who are fully dependent on Maya? When I finished performing mystic yoga for 1,000 years, you asked me upon whom I was meditating. Now here is that supreme person to whom time has no entrance, and who the Vedas cannot understand. Sukadeva Goswami concluded, My dear king, the person who bore the great mountain on his back for the churning of the ocean of milk is the same supreme personality of Godhead, known as Sangha Dandva. I have now described to you his prowess. The endeavor of one who constantly hears or describes this narration of the churning of the ocean of milk will never be fruitless. Indeed, chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only means to annihilate all suffering in this material world. Assuming the form of a young woman and thus bewildering the demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributed to his devotees, the demigods, the nectar produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. Unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always fulfills the desires of his devotees, I offer my respectful obeisances. 41 to 47. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 47. The instruction of this narration concerning the churning of the milk ocean is clearly manifested by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he is equal to everyone, because of natural affection, he favors his devotees. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:29, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend to him. This partiality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is natural. A person cares for his children, but not because of partiality, but in a reciprocation of love. The children depend on the father's affection, and the father affectionately maintains the children. Similarly, because devotees do not know anything but the lotus feet of the Lord is always prepared to give protection to his devotees and fulfill their desires. He therefore says, Konteya pratijani bhajijan nihi name bhakta pananashyati. Bhagavad Gita 9:31. O Sona Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Right? So, bringing out this aspect of how Krishna reciprocates. Right? This is a very important aspect. Because one is going to put in the endeavor, one is going to surrender. So then, what will be gained? That'll be that reciprocation of the Lord. So if you deal in that position, then he deals also in that very loving way. So if we surrender in affection, he reciprocates in affection. Right, so that's the main thing. Right? That should be understood. Otherwise, as has been pointed out before, other processes of self-realization are, okay as assistance, but actually the main thing should be that pure devotion to surrender to the Lord. Always remember him, always hear, chant, and remember about the Lord. If we do that, then everything will work very nicely. Right? The other things are already included. So here is then what will be gained from that is this reciprocation with the Lord. That's the whole point. He as a person will interact with you. So that's what we're trying to get to. Otherwise, then there's, removal of material distress and benefits are there, or, it'll be nice or this or that. But actually, it's about the personal interaction. If that's appreciated, then we see is that whatever can be gained, then is gained in that position. Does that make sense? Yeah. Conclusion. The attractive features of a woman are appreciated by those who are affected by lusty desires. But those who are above such desires, who are on the platform of Krishna consciousness, are very difficult to bewilder. Right? So whatever the material energy offers as attractive, if we're Krishna conscious, we just see how that would connect to Krishna, how it would be engaged in Krishna's service. So then there is no lust, right? Because the whole point is there's two things. There's lust or love. Right? If it's for Krishna, it's love. If it's for ourselves, it's lust. So they're given a different effect, different feeling. There's the idea that I will become happy from lust, but we never do. Right? Because as soon as we go into things for ourselves, then, as is pointed out, what was it? Lada, tapa?
Kari.
Means that the difficulties come up. Because material world is meant to create trouble. And so as soon as we try to enjoy separately from Krishna through lust, then there's always trouble. But if it's we're dealing in love, then we don't experience that trouble. Not that the material world doesn't have the same temporary environment, right? It's always changing, but it doesn't affect us. Right? So that position, then that's actually satisfying. That's something nice. But the point is it's different from what we're used to. We're used to the fire, blazing fire of material existence. So then that soothing, coolness of the nectar of the moon, we're not used to that. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of getting adjusted that whatever we're looking for, it's Krishna. Whatever we're finding is Krishna. And then if we see it in that way, we see we get a different taste than the overlay of lust. Right? There's something we want, there's a particular drive that's there, but if we see that what we're looking for is Krishna, then we'll see it takes on a whole different flavor. And if you compare, the experience of Krishna is greater than the experience of sense gratification. But it's just, otherwise, we're a bit slow. Yeah. Because those who maintain a demoniac mentality are bewildered by the beauty of a woman. But those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, or even those on the platform of goodness, are not bewildered. Lord Shiva is supposed to be above all this attraction, but he was victimized by the captivating power of a woman. Lord Shiva cannot be victimized by Maya. Therefore, it is to be understood that Lord Shiva was being thus harassed by Lord Vishnu's internal potency. Lord Vishnu can perform many wonderful activities through his various potencies. To do anything expertly, he doesn't even need to contemplate. Since Lord Shiva was being harassed by the woman, it is to be understood that this was being done not by a woman, but by the Lord Vishnu, by Lord Vishnu himself. Right? So one may have the doubt, no, but he was victimized, but actually he wasn't victimized by the external energy. He was by the internal potency. So that's why then he has the blessing. He'll never be disturbed by the external potency. Like that. So that, but he's not on the platform of Vishnu, because he can become bewildered by Vishnu's energy, but he's not bewildered by the external energy, right? So that makes him different from the jivas. So that's his position. He's not jiva, he's not Vishnu tattva. He's in between.
But we see the internal and external function after same principles.
Yes, same principles. I mean, because you're dealing with rasa, taste, relationships. So all the mechanics of the whole creation are the same. It's just a matter of the ingredients. Are they superior or inferior? Because if you have something that's conscious, then it's how are you saying? It's superior to something that's not conscious, right? And then, yeah, because we're not interested in the Lord, it doesn't need the fineness. Mm-hmm. Because it's about ourselves. We're used to something not so refined.
It's not fair for internal potency to have to deal with us.
Yes, so like that. So then the fineness that is there in that, the concept of time and space, because if you have a beginning and end, then you have time and space. Yeah. So when you have beyond that, you have no time or space, but there's form, there's interaction, there's like that. So it's a completely different kind of position. So the happiness that comes from that is much greater than what happens here. But we're so conditioned to what happens here, we think this is standard, that we can get something, though we never do. But, you know, we're very hopeful, right? Like that. Therefore, no one should think himself liberated in the presence of a beautiful woman. Right? So that's the whole point, is that whatever is attractive in this world, we should always remember that unless we see it connected to Krishna, there's going to be trouble. Right? That's the whole point. That seems to. Is there something that. Did the Buddhists win? Or we go, here's from the light to the darkness? Or we're just. Oh, it's a test to see if we're going to be illusioned by the external energy. So it's not Brahman and void. Do we have more of these? Or?
Yeah, just underneath.
Just underneath. Oh, cool. Okay, so this is not the whole thing then.
No.
Okay. Five. So then there's still four more chapters.
Five.
20, 21, 22, 23. Okay. Okay. So what do we have here? Chapter 13, Description of Future Manus. Description of future Manu's past. Right? The system of universal management. Balimarsh conquers the heavenly planets. Executing the Payavrata process of worship. The Supreme Lord agrees to become Aditi's son. Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation. And Lord Vamanadeva begs charity from Balimarsh. So this finishes Balimarsh's Lula?
No.
Oh, no, there's still more. Okay. 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 Chapter 13, Description of Future Manus. Pratigya. Shastra can foretell what will happen millions and millions of years in the future. Adhyaya Prakashika. Of the 14 Manus, 6 Manus have already been described. Now this chapter will consecutively describe each Manu from the 7th to the 14th.
Right.
Yes.
Did it finish with the churning of the ocean? I mean, did they finish?
Who finished?
Yeah. Mohini Murti was the last thing about the churning, so Dhanvantari was the last, because it was about the churning of the milk ocean. We did about Lakshmi, we did about...
Yes, yes.
Then when that was Dhanvantari, so it finished, it was the last one.
The last one means?
Nothing was churned more from the milk ocean.
No, because they were trying to get the nectar, so the nectar was the final, yes. He just wanted to know if anything else came out.
After a few chapters, we get back to this.
Yeah, after churning, Ibiza came out or something like that. No, that was it. The nectar was that was the end. Okay. The seventh Manu, who is the son of Vivasvan, is known as Shraddhadeva. He has 10 sons named Ikshvaku, Nabhaga, Drishta, Saryati, Narishyanta, Nabhaga. Oh, I see, Nabhaga. You have Nabhaga and Nabhaga. That would be fun, okay? No, Dad was calling you. No. You're the one in trouble. No, not me. He's the one, it's you. Okay. Tarusha, Prishadra, and Vasuman. In this Manvantara, or region reign of Manu, among the demigods are the Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, Vishvadevas, Maruts, Ashwini Kumars, and Ribhus. The king of heaven, Indra, is known as Purandara, and the seven sages are known as Kasyapa, Atri, Vishishta, Vishwamitra, Gotama, Jamadagni, and Bharadvaj. Okay, this is our one, right? Yeah, because I was going to say this is who we know.
So, so our Manu is Shraddhadeva?
Yes, also
yes.
Vaivasvata.
Yes,
two names, Vaivasvata and Shraddhadeva.
Yes, Vaivasvata would be the position, no?
Vivasvan.
Vivasvan is the position.
No, Vivasvan is the sun god.
I think he's just known by two names because it's Shraddhadeva, but he's the son of the sun god, so he's Vaivasvata.
No, but oh, I see. No, but they're positions, though, I think. There always has these names. Because you see, then it gets into, when it gets into the second seven, it's the same name, but it has some other part on it.
From the next time, it will be like Maharaj.
Yes.
Savarni, and then Dakshasavarni, Brahma Savarni.
Yes, yeah, like this. So that I know of, it's a position. Okay. But at the same time, and so his name is Shraddhavan, just like Indra, his name is Purandara. So that, you know, the previous one, his name was something else.
Is the seventh one always the son of the sun god, whoever the sun god
is? I'm not sure, but maybe some connection or something. But that I know it's a position, but it might not be. But I always understood it as a position. You know, just like the seven sages, and then you have the different.
Right. Okay.
Which is
a position?
Sorry?
It's a position?
No.
It's a name.
His name is Shraddhadeva.
So Vaivasvata is a position?
That I know of. It's the seventh Manu.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. During this period of Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in the womb of Aditi in his incarnation as the son of Kasyapa. In the period of the eighth Manu, the Manu is Savarani. His sons are headed by Nirmoka, and among the demigods are the Sutapas. Bali, the son of Virochana, is Indra, and Gavala and Parasurama are among the seven sages. In this age of Manu, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as Sarvabhauma, the son of Devaguhya and Sarasvati. In the period of the ninth Manu, the Manu is Daksha Savarani. His sons are headed by Bhutaketu, and among the demigods are the Marichi Garbhas. Adbhuta is Indra, and among the seven sages is Dyutiman. In this period of Manu, the incarnation Rishabha is born of Ayushman and Ambudhara. In the period of the tenth Manu, the Manu is Brahma Savarani. Among his sons is Buddhi Shena, and the seven sages are Havishman and others. Among the demigods are the Suvasanas, and Shambhu is Indra. The incarnation in this period of Manu is Vishvakshena, who is a friend of Shambhu, and who is born from the womb of Visuchi in the house of a Brahmin named Vishvasrashta. In the period of the 11th Manu, the Manu is Dharma Savarani, who has 10 sons, headed by Satyadharma. Among the demigods are the Vihangamas. Indra is known as Vaidrita, and the seven sages are Aruna and others. In this Manvantar, the incarnation is Dharma Setu, who is born to Vaidrita and Aryaka. In the period of the 12th Manu, the Manu is Rudra Savarni, whose sons are headed by Devavan. The demigods are the Haritas and others. Indra is Rida Dhamma, and the seventh sages are Tapo Murti and others. The incarnation in this Manvantar is Sudhama, or Swadhama, who is born from the womb of Sunrita. His father's name is Satyasaha. In the period of the 13th Manu, the Manu is Deva Savardhani. Among his sons is Chitrasena. The demigods are the Sukumaras and others. Indra is Devaspati, and Nirmoka is among the sages. The Manvantara avatar is Yogeshwara, who is born of Devahotra and Brihati. In the period of the 14th Manu, the Manu is Indra Savarni. Among his sons are Uru and Gambhira. The demigods are the Pavitras and others. Indra is Suchi, and among the sages are Agni and Bahu. The incarnation of this Manvantara is known as Brihad Bahu. He is born of Satrayana from the womb of Vitana. The total duration of the periods ruled by these Manus is calculated to be 1,000 Chatur Yugas, or 4,300,000 times 1,000 years. Shlokana Sharna, verses 1 to 36. Order of future Manus. Seems like this a quick one. Yeah. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, the present Manu, who is named Shraddhadeva, is the son of Vivasvan, the predominating deity on the sun planet. Shraddhadeva is the seventh Manu. Now please hear from me as I describe his sons. O King Parikit, among the 10 sons of Manu are Ikshvaku, Nabhaga, Drishta, Saryati, Narishyanta, and Nabhaga. The seventh son is known as Drishta. Then came Tarusha and Prishadra, and the tenth son is known as Vasuman. In this Manvantara, O King, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Rudras, the Vishvadevas, the Maruts, the two Ashwini Kumara brothers, and the Ribhus are the demigods. Their head, Indra, king, is Purandara. Kasyapa, Atri, Vashishta, Vishwamitra, Gotama, Jamadagni, and Bharadwaj are known as the seven sages. In this Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the youngest of all the Adityas, known as Vamanadeva, the dwarf. His father was Kasyapa and his mother Aditi. I have briefly explained to you the position of the seven Manus. Now I shall describe the future Manus, along with the incarnations of Lord Vishnu. O King, I have previously described in the sixth canto the two daughters of Vishwakarma named Sangya and Chaya, who were the first two wives of Vivasvan. It is said that the sun god had a third wife named Varava. Of the three wives, the wife named Samgya had three children, Yama, Yami, and Shraddhadeva. Now let me describe the children of Chaya. Chaya had a son named Savarni and a daughter named Tapati, who later became the wife of King Samvarna. Chaya's third child is known as Sanaishchara, Saturn. Varava gave birth to two sons, namely the Ashwini brothers. O King, when the period of the eight Manus arrives, Savarni will become the Manu. Nirmoka and Virajashka will be among his sons. Srila Prabhupada comments. The present reign is that as Vaivasvata Manu. According to astronomical calculations, we are now in the 28th Yuga of the Vaivasvata Manu. Each Manu lives for 71 Yugas, and 14 such Manus rule in one day of Lord Brahma. We are now in the period of Vaivasvata Manu, the 7th Manu, and the 8th Manu will come into existence after many millions of years. Vasukadeva Goswami, having heard from authorities, foretells that the 8th Manu will be Savarani, and that Nirmoka and Virajashka will be among his sons. Shastra can foretell what will happen millions and millions of years in the future. So that's the point of the position where we take is, okay, well, that Shastra doesn't apply to now, we're in some different time. All that it actually means saying that is the modes are different, And I also, being under those particular modes, think that the Veda is changing like the modes that I'm under. But in actuality, no. The Shastra is eternal, so it's always telling what's going on. It can see what's all the things. It's just a matter of how much is revealed. That means they can probably get down to detail and tell you what color dhoti is wearing. But, you know, it's not necessary for the story here. So that's the whole point, is the Shastras are eternal. They're always perfect. There's never a situation in which they don't apply. We can't see it. That's then, you know, our, you know, a matter of training, a matter of practice, a matter of contemplation. Then we can start to see how these work. Sri Sukadeva Goswami. In the period of the eighth Manu, among the demigods will be the Sutapas, the Virajas, and the Amritapas, Amritprabhas. The king of the demigods, Indra, will be Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana. Bali Maharaj gave a gift of 3 pieces of land to Lord Vamanadeva, to Lord Vishnu, and because of this charity, he lost all the 3 worlds. Later, however, when Lord Vishnu is pleased because of Bali's giving everything to him, Bali Maharaj will achieve the perfection of life. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 13. In Bhagavad Gita 7.3, it is stated, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of many millions of people, one may attempt to achieve success in life. This success is explained here. Siddhi consists of achieving the favor of Lord Vishnu, not the yoga siddhis. The yoga siddhis, anima, lagima, pratima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, ishitva, vashishtva, and kamya, vashayita, are temporary. The ultimate siddhi is to achieve the favor of Lord Vishnu. But so, yeah, so that's the whole point. He became a pure devotee. That's the position. Right? That's the perfection. With great affection, the personality of Godhead bound Bali and then installed him in the kingdom of Sutala, which is more opulent than the heavenly planets. Maharaj Bali now resides on that planet and is more comfortably situated than Indra. O king, during the eighth Manvantara, right, because he became, you know, an advanced devotee. Well, Indra, he's a devotee and he does all his work for Krishna and all that, so he has a good facility. He's done very pious, he's worked very hard. But we see Bali Maharaj, because of his devotion to the Lord, he's actually in a more advanced position. He's not a neophyte. Therefore, facilities offered by the Lord are even greater. Yes?
Generally, in the subterranean heavenly planets, they're not pious at all. They don't talk about Vishnu. So in this case, is he actually preaching? Are there devotees down there during that time?
That I don't know, because generally you see the king manages his kingdom, maintains the citizens, and sees that they follow the laws.
Right.
So if it's the Vedic, then they would follow all the Vedic laws, and if they're non-Vedic, that they're not going against Vedic laws. They may have their own particular rules, but as long as they don't go against the Vedic, then it's a lot, like, you know, no, they can't kill cows, and, you know, things like that. So, you know, if they can have an influence, nice. If not, then they just, you know, maintain them.
Probably some.
Yeah, it must be something, but you know, like it's like Prahlad Maharaj preached to his classmates. They all became devotees, but then with time they forgot. You know, just like his mother. She was there in the ashram of Narad Muni, but then she forgot. But Prahlad remembered, so.
Yeah, this regard, Prabhupada mentions that just because of the association of Bali Maharaj and the demons, even the demons have become glory devotees.
Oh, that's good. So by association, even the demons are becoming devotees with Bali Maharaj's association.
Okay,
very good. Okay. So they also become devotees. Yes.
In this case of Bali Maharaj, it is brought out that he became a devotee by association of Prahlad Maharaj.
By Prahlad, okay. Yeah, but he's king of the demons, so he sees to their benefit. So it mentioned before when they were fighting with the demigods, that he was able to have actually a more mature view of the fight between him and Indra than Indra, because of his, you know, devotional understanding. like that. And then when Brahma said to give up the fight, he didn't have a problem with that because, you know, means that, you know, that he was defeated, that all these different, he didn't have a problem because he was a devotee.
But, he will be, Bali Maharaj will be next Indra.
Yes.
And here it says that he will get more facilities than Indra.
Mm. So you're saying, well, it'll be a step down going up to Indra.
Yeah. Demotion.
Social status goes up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he can't have everything.
No, he will be in Sutala, but Indra resides in Indraloka.
Yes, yeah, so now he would transfer to Indraloka. He would be sitting there.
It's like Donald Trump taking over the presidency. His house becomes actually smaller.
Contemporary.
Yeah. No, he doesn't have all the columns.
Probably build an addition.
Yeah. Outhouse.
But can it not be like this, Maharaj? Brahma is a devotee, you know, and not necessary that every time Brahma should be a devotee. So similarly, if Indra is not a devotee now, but Bali Maharaj, when he becomes, you know, future Indra, he can be a devotee. That also could be the possibility.
No, the point is Bali Maharaj is a devotee, so that's his position.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that someone manages the universe, and so then whoever has that particular piety, they take that position. So in these different ages, then, you know, now our Indra is Purandara, so he has that piety, so he's in that position. But we see is that he goes through development in his devotional service, because you know the whole Govardhan Leela is about the conflict of his attachment to his position and authority and his surrender to the Lord. But then we see at the end, because he's a devotee, therefore he does surrender. Like that. You know, so then Bali Maharaj could be. And if no one's qualified, Krishna will take the position himself. Like that. With great... Okay. O king, during the eighth Manvantara, the great personalities... Galava, Diptiman, Parasurama, Ashvatthama, Kripacharya, Rishi Sringa, and our father, Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Narayana, will be the seven sages. Kripacharya goes on for a while. And Rishi Sringa. And Ashwatthama, yeah. Ashwatthama is, I think he's either the next or the one after it, Vyasadeva. Is it the next or the...
Well, it must be the one after, because the next, he's with Vyasadeva as the seven sages. But then
No, this is in the Kali Yuga cycle. Because that's in the next Manvantar. In this Manvantar,
okay.
He'll be the Vyas. I don't remember if it's the next one or the one after that.
Okay.
It's the next one. Okay, so he'll be the next Vyas.
Okay.
So it's, you know. Okay. So there is life after Kurukshetra. Okay. And Rishi Sringa? Yeah, that's the problem. Okay. You know Rishi Sringa? He's the one that has the horns, the antler horns, like that, yeah.
Did you say Ashwatthama, the one that killed Draupadi's
child? Yes, that's what we say. There is life afterwards. So there is no eternal damnation and all that kind of stuff, yeah. Being a Brahmin, he sees what's wrong, he gets it together, he moves on. All the other people who are not Brahmins, they can't forgive him, and they, you know, are within the category of Mahapshadi Govinde Namar Brahmani Vaishnavi Swalpa Punya Bhatamara Jan Vishvaso Navajayate, right? So Swalpa Punya, right? So the point is that it's about Krishna. So it's about what's favorable to Krishna, then everything's all right. If it's not favorable, it's not all right. So the real problem with things is that it's not connected to Krishna. So if you connect to Krishna, everything's correct. But if we no, what about the karma? Then that's material. That's not spiritual.
So. That's amazing.
Actually, by the Vedic standard, it's not so amazing. By the Christian standard, it is.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I mean. So that's the whole point. When you have a group of people who are very have so much impurity, that retribution is the only way that they feel someone can be purified, then you're dealing with quite a low level. But we see as the, you know, it's not a greatly appreciated position, you know, hence the, you know, whoever is, you know, without fault can cast the first stone. Right? Because the whole point is it's all about retribution. But the actual point is that if we're Krishna conscious, that is actually the whole purpose of the material world. So the action and reaction is only because we're not interested in Krishna. We're interested in gaining material benefit. So if we use pious methods to get it, then that's considered good. If we use impious, then that's considered bad. So within the mundane, that's the standard. But in the Vedic, it's no, are you aware of Krishna or not? That's actually the standard. So if you're Krishna conscious, that's pious. And if you're not Krishna conscious, that's sinful. So those who are interested in retribution, they're sinful. Right? Within those who are sinful, then we'll say these are pious or not. Just like in prison, you have good prisoners and bad prisoners. So that's the whole point. And then the guy who's out of the prison, then, you know, they're shocked. How is that guy out of the prison? I knew him. He was in the cell next to me. You know, like that. You know, like that. So that's the... For the present, they are residing in their respective ashrams. In the eighth Manvantara, the greatly powerful personality of Godhead, Sarvabhauma, will take birth. His father will be Deva Guhya, and his mother will be Saraswati. He will take the kingdom away from Purandara, Lord Indra, and give it to Bali Maharaj. Or king, so it's these great sages and personalities, they, you know, they have their duties, and they perform these positions, and then after that they just go back to their ashram. So depending on who they are, sometimes that's it. Sometimes then that you see that they're going on for a much longer time. Mm-hmm. So it's not that, just like Parasara, he was the previous Vyasadeva. I mean, yeah, he's Vyasa, he's Dvaipayana Vyasa's father, but he will also, you'll see, he'll be in the next Manvantara, he'll be one of the seven sages. So then they just spend their time in their ashram doing what they do. So that's how, we, you know, these names come up sometimes over some, you know, Manvantaras. So. O king, the ninth Manu will be Daksha Savarani, who is born of Varuna. Among his sons will be Bhutaketu and Deeptaketu. In this ninth Manvantara, the Paras and Marichigarbhas will be among the demigods. The king of Indra, the king of heaven, Indra, will be named Adbhuta, and Dyutiman will be among the seven sages. Rishabdeva, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will take birth from his father, Ayushman, and his mother, Ambudhara. He will enable the Indra named Adbhuta to enjoy the opulence of the three worlds. The son of Upashloka, known as Brahmasavarani, will be the tenth Manu. Burishena will be among his sons, and the Brahmanas headed by Havishman will be the seven sages. Havishman, Shukra, Satya, Jaya, Murti, and others will be the seven sages. The Suvasanas and Virudhas will be among the demigods, and Shambhu will be their king, Indra. In the home of Vishra-Shrashta, a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear from the womb of Visuchi as the incarnation known as Vishvakshena. He will make friends with Shambhu. In the 11th Manvantara, the Manu will be Dharmasavarani, will be extremely learned in spiritual knowledge. From him there will come 10 sons, headed by Satyadharma. The Hangamas, Kamagamas, Nirvanaruchis, and others will be the demigods. The king of the demigods, Indra, will be Vaidrita, and the seven sages will be headed by Aruna. The son of Aryaka, known as Dharmasetu, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will appear from the womb of Vaidrita, the wife of Aryaka, and will rule the three worlds. O king, the 12th Manu will be named Rudra Savarani, Devan, Upadeva, and Deva Shrestha will be among his sons. In this Manvantara, the name of Indra will be Ritadhama, and the demigods will be headed by Haritas. Among the sages will be Tapomurti, Tapasvi, and Agnidraka. From the mother named Sunrita and the father named Satyasaha will come Svadhamma, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will rule that Manvantara. The 13th Manu will be named Deva Savarani, and he will be very advanced in spiritual knowledge. Among his sons will be Chitrasena and Vichitra. In the 13th Manvantara, the Sukarmas, Sutramas, will be among the demigods. Divaspati will be the king of heaven, and Nirmoka and Tattvadarsha will be among the seven sages. The son of Devahotra, known as Yogeshwara, will appear as a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mother's name will be Brihati. He will perform activities for the welfare of Divaspati. The name of the 14th Manu will be Indra Savardhani. He will have sons like Uru, Gambira, and Buddha. The Pavitras and Chakshushas will be among the demigods, and Suchi will be Indra, the king of heaven. Agni, Bahu, Suchi, Shuddha, Magadha, and others of great austerity will be the seven sages. O King Parikrit, in the 14th Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear from the womb of Vitana, and his father's name will be Satrayana. This incarnation will be celebrated as Brihadbhanu, and he will administer spiritual activities. O King, I have now described to you the 14 manas appearing in the past, present, and future. The total duration of time ruled by these manas is 1,000 yuga cycles. This is called a kalpa, or one day of Lord Brahma. Conclusion, Shastra can foretell what will happen millions and millions of years in the future. Right? So this is one day of Brahma. So for us it's very great. But for some of these personalities, like Vishishta and that, he's the son of Brahma. So he's going to be around for all 500,000 manus, right? So, if, you know, at one time in the day, he's the, you know, the seventh manu, he's one of the seven sages or other like this, then it's not a big deal on that level. And then on the lower level, then they come up, they go down like that. But you generally see in these sages and other things, that's where you see the names come up again and again. They seem to last a little longer than the Indras, right? Chapter 14. I think that's the quickest we've gone through a chapter.
Pretty good, yeah.
Chapter 14, the system of universal management. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. Because this is his constitutional position, Jivara Surup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. But in Kali Yuga, only one-fourth of the religious principles remain, and thus Dharma cannot be followed. Right? So that's the doubt. Okay, is that the eternal occupation is to serve Krishna, that is the constitutional position, but in the Kali Yuga, because the religious only one-fourth remains, how can they be, you know, how you say, actually function on the platform of eternal Dharma? Right? Because we're taking eternal Dharma as better than Dharma. Then, if only one quarter of Dharma remains, how can such unqualified people be engaged in the highest Dharma, right? So the doubt will come up. If the inaugurators of the Hare Krishna movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by reestablishing Sanatana Dharma. The eternal occupational duties of humanity. So that's how it'll work, because the Sankirtan movement has the potency to counteract these difficulties of Kali Yuga. Right? So it's not, oh, it's Kali Yuga, we can't do all these things. No. The Sankirtan movement, anything can be done. You have to know which one's more powerful and which one's not. You know. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. That's the basis of everything. So that's what I was saying before. That's actually the point that always has to be there. So any plan that's made has to be based on that principle. If it's not made on that, then it's not actual Krishna conscious strategy. Chapter 14 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikhit asked Sukadev Goswami questions 14.1 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 8.14.1. Okay. O most opulent Sukadev Goswami, please explain to me how Manu and the others in each manvantara engage in their respective duties and by whose order they are so engaged. Srila Sukadev Goswami gives a reply to question 14.1 throughout the rest of chapter 14. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the duties allotted to Manu by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All the Manus, as well as their sons, the sages, the demigods, and the Indras, act under the orders of various incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the end of every Chatur Yuga, consisting of Satya, Dvapara, Treta, and Kali Yuga, the sages, acting under the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, distribute the Vedic knowledge and thus reinstate eternal religious principles. Right, because it gets down to Kali Yuga, and then when everything started back again as Satya Yuga, then these great sages, they again distribute the Vedic knowledge. Like Narad Muni distributes the Pancharatra, because the Pancharatra would get lost, he redistributes it. Right?
It's just the mode of goodness increases, and then it comes.
It comes, but it's also, but as pointed out, it's by the order of the Lord. So that's why the Manvantara avatar is to see that these things are happening. So he's there to protect Indra, but it's to see that the universal affairs, this system of universal management goes on. Manu's duty is to reestablish the system of religion. Manu's sons execute Manu's orders, and thus the entire universe is maintained by Manu and his descendants. The Indras are various rulers of the heavenly planets. Assisted by the demigods, they rule the three worlds. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also appears as incarnations in different yugas. He appears as Sanaka, Sanatana, Yajnavalkya, Dattatreya, and others. And thus he gives instructions in spiritual knowledge, prescribed duties, principles of mystic yoga, and so on. Right? So all the different things necessary for human beings. But, of course, devotional service is the topmost. But all these different things are described in relationship to pure devotion. So therefore, one can either follow all these other things or just follow the process of pure devotion. So then in doing that, then how do we follow just the pure devotion? Because it won't be formless, right? That's the principle of devotion. So then what the acharyas recommend, that's what we follow. Right? So it's not that we follow these others because they're recommended by the Vedas, but it's that they're from the Vedas and recommended by the acharyas. Because otherwise there's so many processes, there's so many aspects are there. So we accept those that the acharyas recommend. What they glorify. So, yeah. As Marichi and others, he creates progeny. As the king, he punishes the miscreants. And in the form of time, he annihilates the creation. One may argue, quote, if the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead can do anything simply by his will, why has he arranged for so many personalities to manage? How and why he does this cannot be understood by those who are under the clutches of Maya. Yeah. So that's the point, is he's engaging all these living entities, but they're taking, no, because the point is this, if I was supreme, I wouldn't let anybody do anything. Right? So... yeah, that's the Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 11, six functions of the Manvantara. So there's only 11 verses.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's even shorter than the last
two
one.
Two chapters in one class. Can we do it?
No, I don't know. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay. There's one chapter, so I forget which canto it is. It has nine verses.
Nine verses?
Yes.
Yeah. Five, yeah.
Is it five?
Five verses.
No, it's Shishimara. Canto five.
Oh.
Remember? Planetary systems, something about the
Shishimara. Oh, the Shishimara. Okay.
You have a okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The Shishimara planet.
But there was much commentary, but it was still quite short.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, nine.
Okay. Cool. Okay, Parikhit Maharaj inquired, six functions in the Manvantara. O most opulent Sukadev Goswami, please explain to me how Manu and the others in each Manvantara engage in their respective duties and by whose order they are engaged. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, The Manus, the sons of Manus, the great sages, the Indras, and all the demigods, O king, are appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations, such as Yajna. O king, I have already described to you various incarnations of the Lord, such as Yajna. The Manus and others are chosen by these incarnations, under whose directions they conduct the universal affairs. At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, reestablish the principles of religion. Right? So he says the eternal, so that means Sanatana Dharma is what's always established. Then it goes down from there. The Sanatana Dharma is the standard religion of the universe. That is the principle. So in other words, it means devotional service is the actual thing. Then the form that you'll use, the external, the, you know, for the management, then they'll use the varnashram. So that means daiva varnashram with the purpose of pure devotion. Right? So that's the Sanatana Dharma. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So this means that the Lord is personally appointing the Manus, and then the Manus are personally appointing the other... Whoever, demigods, it sounds like?
Not necessarily. It appears that the Lord appoints everybody.
Lord.
Yes, because, he, you know, the seven sages and Indra and all the those positions that it mentions. Who are the demigods? Who are the who's Indra and who are the seven sages? But then Manu, then he manages that all these different things go on properly.
So it's he's personally appointing. It's not just his. It's not just an automated sort of karmic.
No, because otherwise, why come? Because he can do it by his energy. He can take care of everything. So it's
right. He can, but I think I'm just, you know, at least in terms of you know, we're getting a birth based on our activities, and it's an automated sort of process. But I guess because they're devotees. Right. And then he's
because it's they're qualified, but it's just like you have 500,000 Manus in a lifetime of Brahma, you know. So then, you know, so they have the qualification. That's why they become. It's not that they're not qualified, and they.
Right, but he's choosing amongst those who are qualified.
Yes, because the point is it doesn't have to be now. It is at some point you make. Like Bali Maharaj, he qualified himself. You know, I think it's in this Manvantara. Or previous Manvantara. Previous Manvantara, but it'll be the one after. So when he's qualified, it's not the next one, the one after that, that he becomes the Indra. So like that. Yes. Yeah, like that. So then. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 4.
To this point, that he will be Indra in the next Manvantara.
Yes.
We usually say that they all live up to 100 years except for Manu.
No, it means everybody means it's 100 years on their time.
Yes.
But it's by our time it's more. But the Manus, because it appears that they stay down here, then they're living much longer.
And Bali, because he's from down there, so they also live longer, it appears to be?
That I don't know, what's their time frame. Because the normal thing is whoever you are, it's 100 years. You know, so even if you're an ant, you know, it's your 100 years. Even though it may be 2 weeks, but the experience is that of 100 years. So as Manu would feel that the experience would be 100 years, but it's over a long period of time.
Like if you say Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, they're still...
They're Chiranjeev, so they're not connected with the time factor.
Okay, so they're in different categories.
Yeah, they're in different categories.
So Bali Maharaj would not be in that category then?
I'm not sure. Because he's not one of the, you know, these... He's as a devotee, he's there, but, you know, as a, you know, Prahlad Maharaj, Hanuman, these, they're in a different kind of category.
Because he's also one of the 12 Mahajans.
Bali Maharaj. Oh, then he would be, you know, because they're the Mahajans for the length of the universe. It's not that those are changing, you know, like that. They'll always be the Mahajans. It's just that, you know, it's within the universe that they're the ones. So when they appear, that may be there. Like the Kumaras are the first to appear. Brahma is the first, and then the Kumaras, and then like this. So, Oh, you have three right there, huh? The Kumaras, Brahma, and Narad Muni, and Shiva. Yeah, four. Four out of 12 are all right in the beginning. Hmm? Yeah. Five. Later. In this verse, the words dharma and sanatana are very important. Sanatana means eternal, and dharma means occupational duties. From Satyayuga to Kali Yuga, the principles of religion and occupational duty gradually deteriorate. In Satyayuga, the religious principles are observed in full, without deviation. In Treta Yuga, however, these principles are somewhat neglected, and only three-fourths of the religious duties continue. In the Dwapara Yuga, only half of the religious principles continue. And in Kali Yuga, only one-fourth of religious principles, which gradually disappear. At the end of Kali Yuga, the principles of religion, or the occupational duties of humanity, are almost lost. Indeed, in this Kali Yuga, we have passed through only 5,000 years, yet the decline of Sanatana Dharma is very prominent. The duty of saintly persons, therefore, is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to reestablish it for the benefit of the human society, the entire human society. This Krishna conscious movement has been started according to this principle, right? So it's not, we can't say, oh, it's Kali Yuga, we can't do this. No, it's Kali Yuga, we have to do this. That's why. So we're preaching, we're doing. So we can't say, oh, it's called the Yuga, so we can't do all these things. Why stick it? Go live in a cave, you know, like that. You know, that's where everyone's going to end up anyway, so might as well be on the cutting edge, right? Yeah. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.351, Kaler dosha nider ni... Nidher Ranjan Asti Hyeko Mahan Gunaha Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambrajet. The entire Kali Yuga is full of faults. It is like an unlimited ocean of faults. But the Krishna conscious movement is very authorized. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who 500 years ago inaugurated the movement of Samkirtana, Krishna Kirtana, we are trying to introduce this movement according to superior orders all over the world. Now, if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by reestablishing Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupational duties of humanity. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna, Jivar Surup Hoy Krishner Nityadas. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulila 20.108. This is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means nitya or eternal, and Krishna Das means servant of Krishna. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. So that's the essential point. You take from there, build out from there, then everything works. That's the structure. Then from that, then you add, make it practical, apply it. But if that's not there, then it actually is not the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? Like that. That's the whole point, because that's what the whole universal, the structure is actually for. The universal management is to establish that. So if it's not establishing that, then what's the point? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur.